Today we're looking at Psalm 49, but Andy read earlier from Matthew chapter 6, and in that it talks about worrying. So if you have the next slide, please. Can any of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus tells his disciples not to worry. Now, we don't enjoy it when we're worrying about things. It doesn't make us feel happy. And doctors and psychologists tell us all those negative effects that worrying can have on us. So, why do we do it? Well, and what do we do about it? Well, what do we do about the worrying that we have? Well, we tend to worry about that worrying. And if you think too much about all the negative effects, it just makes us worry all the more. And we worry about our worrying. But Jesus' answer to his disciples was to encourage them to get the right perspective. So those who were here last week will know, next slide, that we just started a new series on the Psalms, and Andy started with Psalm 1. So I hope you'll remember what it was talking about. Blessed is the one who does not walk or stand. Sit. Excellent. Walk, stand, and sit in the way of sinners and mockers. But who delights. You guys are doing well. I thought you were cheating. And meditates. Good. So, delighting in the law of the Lord and meditating upon it. And Andy told us about the secret to having a blessed life. And if you can't remember what the secret was, or you're interested, well then, you can either ask Andy or look on the church website and download the audio file from last week and see what Andy said as he set us off on this course about the blessed life in Psalms. But in Psalm 1, we looked at the contrast between the way of the righteous and the way of the wicked. Today's psalm kind of continues that theme. And it also kind of continues on with the theme from last year of it's okay to not be okay, because this is more of a wisdom psalm. And in true wisdom psalm style, it kind of contradicts everything that was said before. Because it's saying, well, actually, no, that's how things are meant to work out, that the good are blessed and the unrighteous are suffer. But actually, the reality is that we see something a little bit different in life. And the psalm is meditating upon this unfairness about those who are unrighteous prospering, having material prosperity. Why is there? Is there really any justice in this world when those who are unrighteous have all the health and the wealth and the prosperity and comfort? And so what is this link between the blessed life and prosperity? How does it all work out? Look at the next slide, please. Now, I am an accountant. And this psalm talks about wealth, so I think I should probably talk about investments. And in order to convince you that I know what I'm talking about, I should tell you a little bit about my experience in the stock market. So, about 20 years ago, some of you may remember that the Halifax Building Society demutualised and became a bank. Now, I had been a Halifax customer for some time, and as such, I was awarded 200 free shares in the bank, which was worth almost £1,500, which for someone who just started the world of work seemed like a lot of money. It was worth a lot to me. And that value of the money, of those shares, rapidly grew to over £2,000. And I was thinking, how much is this going to grow? Is it going to peak? When's a good time to sell? Or should I just hold on to it forever? Because banks, they're reliable. Nothing goes wrong with banks, do they? Does it? Well, I didn't rush things, and I waited, and I watched, and sure enough, in a short space of time, some of you may remember, the banking crisis happened, and the Halifax was one of the ones which got hit the worst, and it was sold for a pittance, and my £2,000 was quickly worth £50. Now, if you notice the advertising that goes on about stocks and shares nowadays, you'll see that there's always this disclaimer that goes on, saying that the value of stocks and shares can rise, but it can also fall. And that's something we need to remember in this life, about our investments, that all these things, that they're very short term. Because this £50, which I was left with, you know, in an eternal perspective, even that £50 is worth nothing. In fact, the £2,000 I had at one stage, that was worth nothing. Because on the day that I die, how is that £50, that £2,000, ever going to help me? It doesn't make any difference how high the value is. The amount of money isn't going to make any difference to me on the day I die. I cannot take that with me. Could the next slide, please. And so, as we look at life and wealth from an eternal perspective, that's what the topic is from today's psalm. And the first few verses tell us who the psalm is written for. It says there, "Hear this, all you peoples." So, does that include you? Yes, all right. And if you're not really sure, it says, "all who live in this world." Is there anyone here who is not ordinarily resident in this world? Right, maybe a few people have been to the International Space Station, can it claim it? But otherwise, it pretty much covers you. And if you're really not sure, it says about low and high, the rich and the poor alike. He's making sure that the people who are reading this don't just think this is like a poor person's rant against the rich, or a rich person saying to a poor person, don't worry about it. It's for everybody. And what's the definition of a rich person? Someone who earns more than you do. Now, in this psalm, the writer has been meditating on the unfairness of life, as we said, and how the unrighteous are blessed with all this health and wealth and prosperity. And some of the conclusions come out of his thinking. And for those who want simple answers, he doesn't give them. It's like when you read the book of Job. You know, you really want God to give an answer for why it was that Job, being a righteous man, living a righteous life and doing a great job with his family, lost everything, all his possessions, his family, even his health. And while there is a happy ending, God never really gives him an explanation of why it happened. Because why? There's a question we'd like to ask, why? And there's nothing wrong with asking the question, but maybe sometimes asking why isn't what's going to help us the most. And what instead is going to help us is changing our perspective on things and how we look at things. So could go to the next slide. The perspective the psalmist uses, we find here in verse 5. You see, he's starting to worry about things. We looked at worry from Matthew chapter 6. And verse 5 implies that in the difficult times, he was getting a bit anxious and distracted looking at the wealthy who weren't worried by these difficult times because they were able to be kept by their wealth. And that was keeping them healthy and safe. And whereas him, he was worrying about it. He was getting distracted. Why should I fear when evil days come, when wicked deceivers surround me, those who trust in their wealth and boast of their great riches? Clearly there's some fear going on in his mind. And so what he does throughout this psalm is does a bit of self-talk. He was talking to himself to remind himself of the truths and the correct perspective on life. Now, some people say talking to yourself is a sign of madness, but it isn't. Rather, it's really a helpful way of us processing our thoughts and helpful in meditating upon the Bible even. Sometimes you should try it. Read the passage of the Bible and then try out loud to explain it to yourself. You'll see, firstly, how little sense you make, but as you try to explain it, then you'll find that you understand it a lot better. Or even try to write down something as an explanation about it. Either way, it helps you to understand and to process it. And maybe that's a bit of what the psalmist is doing. He said that he meditated on God's word. And so this is the outcome of his meditations that he wants to share with people. As he says, it's an important message for all people. So if you go to the next slide, we see in verses 7 to 9 that the rich, though they may have this wealth that helps them in this life, in the long term, though, it doesn't help them because there's nothing that they can do to stop death. Death is something that comes to us all, no matter how rich you are. There's nothing you can do about it. You can't buy your way out of it. Now, I read that there's about 200 people, I think it is, who so far have spent a lot of money on having either their bodies or just their heads cryogenically preserved in liquid nitrogen at some ridiculously low temperature in the hope that one day the technology will be there to bring them back to life so they can continue living, so they may be able to live a longer life. It's a lot of money that people put into such things when there's no proof that it's ever going to work. And there's also a lot of rich people who are putting money into researching how to extend our lives so that maybe one day people will be able to live not just for 70 or 100 years, but for hundreds of years. But even if they had success, the truth remains that for each of us, one day we will pass away. We are still all mortal beings. If we go to the next slide, we see in verse 12 that it says, people, despite their wealth, do not endure. They're like the beasts that perish. And then in verse 20, people who love wealth but lack understanding are like the beasts that perish. And verse 14 goes so far as to compare us to sheep that are destined to die. Now, if you think about it, this was written to a farming community that raised sheep. For what purpose? For food. So it's like, paraphrasing this, you could say, those who trust in their wealth are no better than a lamb destined to become a roast dinner. All the physical investments we make in this life, they are going to pass away. And ultimately, we too will pass into eternity without even these present bodies that we have to clothe us. Go to the next slide. We see Luke chapter 12, where Jesus told this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? I've got no place to store my crops. He thought, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And then I'll store all my surplus grain there. And I'll say to myself, pat on the back. I've got plenty of grain for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool. This very night, your life will be demanded from you. And then who's going to get all what you've prepared for yourself? And this is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich towards God. And later, Jesus also said, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world, but to forfeit his soul? You see, if you think about it, you're not going to spend a whole day painting and decorating your house and filling it with all sorts of lovely and beautiful things if you knew that that night, that house was going to be destroyed. And when we think of our lives from an eternal perspective, we find that's precisely what we're doing with much of our time. We invest our time and our money and our effort into things that are not going to last, things that we can't take with us into eternity. We might as well be like the Egyptian pharaohs and have these things buried with us. They're not going to help us. If people make the same mistake today as they made then, trusting in the riches instead of looking towards eternal life. And if people are not just trying to live forever physically, many people try to extend their lifespan by their inheritance of getting buildings or countries or cities or some monument named after themselves. And verse 11 talks about rich people having the lands named after them. 1924, Leningrad was named after Vladimir Lenin. So he wanted to extend his memory by having a city named after him. But in 1991, people didn't want to remember Lenin anymore, so they renamed it back to St. Petersburg. You see, even those things which are named after us are not going to last. And does anyone here know who Henry Flint was? Henry Flint. Not a single person here knows who Henry Flint was. Sorry? Builder of this church. Well done. One person knows. Congratulations, Steve. Henry Flint was the builder of this church. We sit in here Sunday after Sunday and we walk past a memorial stone on the outside with his name on it, saying Henry Flint built this church in 1904, 1905, whatever it was. But we've no idea who he was. We don't know anything about him. Trying to immortalize ourselves somehow in this present world is a vain activity because we're all going to pass away. And for those who trust in their wealth, instead of having the traditional psalm for their funeral, Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, they're stuck with Psalm 49, verse 14, where it says, death will be their shepherd. But have you thought then about what things is it that you're actually going to take with you into eternity? The next slide then. What are you going to take with you into eternity? If you go back to the Sermon on the Mount, we see that Jesus said, do not store up for yourself treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy, and thieves do not break in and steal. What are those treasures in heaven? See, investing in this world is doomed to be a loss when we die. But anything we invest in heaven, we will have with us for eternity. The next slide, please. See, in 1 Timothy 6:7, it says, we brought nothing into this world, and we can take nothing out of it. So, how can you build up for yourself treasures in heaven? See, that's a question you should think very seriously about, because it affects all the investments you make now, with your time, with your money, with your efforts, your actions, and your attitudes. How can you build up for yourselves treasures in heaven? That's the next slide. Think about that. As I read through this psalm, you see, I was thinking about maybe other kinds of inheritance, like what it is that, by way of inheritance, I'm going to leave to my children when I die. You see, I don't want to be like my grandfather. He wanted to leave a good inheritance for his children, so he worked hard and saved his money. And when he died at age 99, he passed on that inheritance to his children. Except that he was 99 when he died, and all three of his daughters had already retired. They didn't really need the money. It was a little bit late for them then. See, building up material supplies for the future, it's not a problem, but it's not going to help you. This psalm is not saying that material wealth is something that is bad or evil. It's saying, what are you trusting in? So we might try to, invest in the children in other ways. Maybe I'll take my children to play some sport, because I know that their sporting arrangements, that, their sporting skills, surely they'll last. Reading's win over Nottingham Forest yesterday, I'm sure Graham was very happy about it. But that's soon going to be forgotten. They're a great activity, and I can invest the time and efforts in helping my children get achievements if they've got any talent there. But those talents are not things, those achievements are not things they're going to take with them into eternity. Those things will not last. Or I can invest in their education. I'm sure we all think education is a good thing. But I don't think that's something that's going to survive death either. You see, I highly doubt if the treasure in heaven that Jesus was talking about had any relationship to our knowledge or our intelligence. So what are those things that I can store up for myself or develop for my kids to prepare them for heaven? What is that future inheritance that it can be? And so that's a question that I want to leave you to ponder over. Because the answer you give to that question and what you do about trying to build up your inheritance in heaven could change the way you live your life. It could change all your priorities. And you need to be sure you're following the right path, the path that God has for you. See, Jesus said, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. And then all these things will be given to you as well. That was in the Sermon on the Mount that we were reading from earlier. But before you worry too much about your treasure you're going to have in heaven, maybe you should be worried first about whether you're going to be there in heaven to enjoy it. And part of the problem the psalmist was pondering was exactly this. In verses 7 to 10 it says, no one can redeem the life of another or give to God a ransom for them. For the ransom for a life is costly, and no payment is ever enough that they should live on forever and not see decay. For all can see that the wise die, and that the foolish and the senseless also perish, leaving their wealth to others. If each of us has sinned, we are excluded from God's presence. And because we have sinned against an infinite God, any amount that we try to get off to pay off this debt will not help, because it's an infinite debt that we owe him. And for those of you who like maths, let's do a bit now. Imagine I have got an infinite debt and I try to pay off £100 every week towards paying off that debt. Does that make any dent in the debt? No. Let's change it. I'll make £1,000. I'll make £1,000 every day I'm going to pay off this debt with. Does that make a dent in the debt? No. Pay £1,000,000 every minute. It's still going to make no dent in that debt, because it's an infinite debt. There's no way we can ever pay that debt, because it's too much. And the psalmist was here saying that the price is too high. There's nothing that we can do to pay it. But in Exodus chapter 30, God told the Israelites that to make atonement for their lives, what did they have to do? There was a sacrifice of a goat, and then each person had to bring half a silver sanctuary shekel. Now that, in today's money, is worth about £5. A flat rate payment of £5 to pay off for their sin. The same price for the high and for the low, for the rich and for the poor. And the psalmist is expressing his wonder in these verses. How can £5 ever be enough to pay off an infinite debt? And the truth is that, of course, it can't. It can't help at all. But what it is a token value, a recognition of faith, that saying, I can't do anything to pay off this debt. I'm completely dependent upon God to do it for me. God himself has to pay the debt. He has to cover it. He has to pay the price, because I can't. And the psalmist wrote, God will redeem me from the realm of the dead. He will surely take me to himself. He had faith that God was going to cover that debt. And it's similarly that by faith we can trust God to rescue us. Except that we've got the benefit of hindsight, of looking back and seeing Jesus' death. Because it was Jesus' death and resurrection that paid the price for our salvation. And it's with this in mind that we'll be taking communion today. Jesus paid the price for your sin so that you could be with him forever in heaven. And are you going to be there? That's a choice that you can make. And just as the psalmist couldn't see how the £5 saved his life, the only way you have of knowing the guaranteed place in heaven is by faith. The psalmist trusted that that silver half shekel was going to get him into heaven. Not because it in itself had any value, but is trusting in God to do it. And it's by faith that we trust in Jesus' death and resurrection that that's what is going to be saving us. And as you do, by faith, that he'll bring his Holy Spirit into your heart to dwell there and cause your life to change. And as you see that change, you can be more and more certain of what it is that he has done for you. And when we think about just this infinite God who's in charge of this incredible universe, and in perspective, we are just so small and our worries are even smaller. And yet, he paid the price. He cared about you. He died for you and he rose again. It's just too much for us to understand. And yet, as we live our lives in this perspective, it can help us in our worries and our fears for our future. As we come to communion, if you think you're good enough for heaven, then please don't take the communion, because you're not good enough for heaven and you never will be. But if you recognise that you don't deserve heaven, but it's only through faith in Jesus' death and resurrection, which were for you, then you can take the bread and wine together with us as we remember what it is, this incredible gift that God has given for us.